show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey there, you over there. Yeah, by the corn dog stand. What are you standing around for, Mac? Huh? Come on over here. Don't you know what it is? Don't you know what today is? Come right over. Hurry. Step right up. One show only. 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. It is indeed Moran Monday. Freaks you will not believe behind this. You can see it through the magic of radio. Behind this thin canvas backdrop. No, this is no bearded lady, no two-headed snake. These are right-wing Morans, and they are here. They are behind this oh-so-thin wall of canvas. Just step right up and come inside. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. Hurry. Oh, yes, it is. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. I hope everyone had a happy Easter. There's some sort of old folk wisdom here in the hills about if it rains on Easter or it doesn't rain on Easter. I think we're in for some good news according to that folk wisdom, because it didn't rain on Easter. We had a beautiful, beautiful, sunshiny, magnificent Easter Sunday. Agnes, as is her traditional wont, went out and crucified a chocolate rabbit in the front yard. It drew several stares. But, no, I hope you all had a wonderful time of it. Let's see. It is Moran Monday. And I'm going to break my own rule. I'm going to break my own rule and well, no. Okay, before we get to the funny stuff. You know when you go to the grocery store? You go to the grocery store and you look in the meat counter. Yeah, I know. This is not for the vegetarians and the vegans. This is for us bad people who eat meat. You go to the grocery store and you look in the meat case, and there's a chicken and there's some pork and there's some beef. And you think, my, oh, my, look at that. $8.99 a pound for T-bone steak. That's a lot for T-bone steak. And you think, yeah, maybe not this time. I'll go for the hamburger instead. Because at least you know that the hamburger might be ground on the place, because none of you are going to Walmart and try to support our little local grocery store. And they do, in fact, grind their own burger. Pretty good burger, really. But if you're like me, you don't give much thought beyond the extent of that meat counter, and you don't think about where the meat comes from. You don't think about the combined animal feed operations, or CAFOs, out in the Midwest somewhere, far, far from any prying eyes. You don't think about cattle standing up to their knees in their own excrement, pumped up with hormones, antibiotics, and eating a diet that no cow was ever meant to eat. You don't think of any of that. And that's because you're not supposed to. Because if you did, you might rebel against the system.
you might refuse to tolerate that kind of the massive megalopoly, the corporatization of the food chain, food supply. And we can't have you doing that. You're supposed to be right there in front of the TV watching American Idol and having a lovely time of it. Who's Dancing with an Idiot? You know, whatever the show is. You're not supposed to think of that. By the same token, when you walk out of the room and you leave the lights on and thereby leave a nice, well-lighted, empty room behind you, well, you do that because you don't think about where electricity comes from. 42% of the electricity in this country comes from coal. And on the eastern seaboard, a great deal of that coal comes from Appalachia. The majority of it comes from mountaintop removal operations that are a horror in their own right. Other parts of it come from underground. The steel in that barbecue grill that you maybe are looking at purchasing for Memorial Day for the big barbecue. Well, look for that little mark on there that says Made in China. And when you see that, you'll know that the steel inside that box was made in China using coal, metallurgical coal that came from both Australia and the United States. Don't look at that label that says Made in China, though, unless you're willing to deal with the reality, unless you're willing to deal with the same sort of reality that involves thinking about the CAFO Kauschwitzes in the Midwest, because it's no prettier, and it's even nastier in many ways. Over the weekend, a transport vessel carrying tons and tons and tons and tons of coal veered 9 miles, 9 miles off its permitted course and ran aground on the Great Barrier Reef of Australia, that most fragile of ecosystems, that ecosystem that tells us so much about where our planet is headed. Hung on the Great Barrier Reef and coming apart, and I haven't seen an update. One of you can help me, I'm sure. It was noted that that vessel was carrying a massive load of bunker fuel, more than was even necessary to carry. It had to carry extra fuel, you see, because ships going into port in China often have to wait offshore and sail about a bit until they can get a berth to come in and unload, because that is the volume of the world's resources that are pouring into that nation to fuel an artificially high rate of growth day in and day out. American coal goes to China, too, as we've discussed on a number of occasions. Officials were worrying about about what would happen if the ship broke apart and its massive load of fuel oil spread onto the reef. Hint, nothing good. As an aside, the news story that I read said, and, of course, if the ship were to break up and sink, it would send a lot of coal all over the ocean, which would sink to the ocean floor and wouldn't be as much of a problem. Bullshit. Coal laying out anywhere is a problem, and it would toxify the waters around the Great Barrier Reef in manners that we can't begin to fathom, because we really don't know enough about all of the poisons contained in coal. That's item one. Literally minutes before I went on air, minutes, I received horrifying news. And this is news that, whether you're in Appalachian or not, touches you. Because it is part of the true cost of coal. As you and I speak, one local news outlet here in West Virginia is reporting that 6 men are dead and 21 more are unaccounted for following an explosion and roof collapse at a Massey Energy mine in Raleigh County, West Virginia. Those numbers are uncertain. But the certainty is the horror. And the certainty is that I have a hand in the death. My family has a hand in the death. You have a hand in the death. And most assuredly, Don Blankenship has a hand. Oh, he's got both hands and the rear and his rear trotters in the trough where the death is concerned. I hope this news story is incorrect. Emergency crews are on the scene. The incident, the horror was alleged to said to have occurred at Massey subsidiary Performance Coal's Upper Big Branch mine south near Neoma, West Virginia. Further information on TV Channel 6 reporting 6 dead and 21 unaccounted for. We have a hand in it because we treat electricity like a right instead of the very, very costly thing that it is. Over and above whatever your power bill is, coal has a much greater cost. It has a cost that we've discussed in terms of what it does to you, what it does to your family, your friends, your neighbors, and your very future. But it has a cost in human life and human blood. I do not know for a fact that the mine in question is non-union, but it would be very unusual if it was union insofar as it is a Massey mine, and Don Blankenship would rather have human beings killed than to operate a safe union underground mine. That is an undeniable fact. Mine deaths in the United States are, by a vast factor, more likely to happen in a non-union hole than in a union operation where every conceivable effort is made to keep the miners working underground safe. It is very unlikely this was a union mine. I will try to find that out for you as soon as I can. News of the story is going around the country as we speak. It's being reported in the Chicago Tribune at its website. Of course, the Massey Energy is being tight-lipped about it. The company did not provide details on the extent of the damage. The damage? Really, the damage? Is that how we're categorizing the sacrifice of human lives for corporate greed now, the damage? Thank you to David in South Carolina for getting that Chicago Tribune website link to me. So we will go forward knowing what is transpiring in southern West Virginia, that is transpiring in large part because we walk out of well-lighted empty rooms that transpires in large part because it has been made nearly impossible for us as Americans to buy things made in this country, no matter how hard we try. These things have consequences. And these things are horrors. The first I saw of this story, the subject line was mine accident on Coal River. Pray, pray, pray. And such has been the history of this state and this region. Live on hay, day by day. Pray, pray, pray. There'll be pie in the sky when you die. Perhaps if Massey Energy was a union operation, there wouldn't need to be quite so much praying. We know for a fact, for instance, that the Sago disaster of a decade past, we know that that was in large part a function of the fact that that gassy, deadly, widow-making hole was a non-union affair. We know that. And I don't want you to feel guilt. I don't want you to... sadness, yes. If you're a praying person, by all means, pray. This is not about guilt. This is about awareness. If you walk out of a room, make it a moral imperative to yourself that you turn the goddamn lights off. Pay attention to the world you live in, please. Lives are riding on it. Look at that box label. Whatever it is you're buying, if it's got metal inside it, look at that box label. If it says made in China, and it has metal in it, you know that it only exists because of the predation of Appalachia and the coal-producing regions of Australia and Indonesia. It only exists because people are preyed upon to extract that coal, to get it to China, to turn it into junk that is manufactured by slaves. Be aware and awake and alert in your own world. Prove untrue those words of Kurt Vonnegut that I have taken to using as my signature line in my email. Prove it untrue. A normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous, industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. Prove that untrue. Maybe that means we have to make ourselves abnormal in order to hear. In order to hear our own consciences. Sue, serving in the role of a chief research assistant at this point, noting that in the 7 of the last 10 years, this same mine has recorded a non-fatal injury rate worse than the national average for similar operations, according to Mine Safety and Health Administration statistics. It employs 200 workers. That is the usual day-to-day course of operations of a Massey mine, where their motto is, work like you mean it. Sue is still efforting a response on whether or not this is a union or non-union operation. We'll get on to the fun parts of Moran Monday presently, but with news like that, you can't just march into the ha 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 part. And I got some real ha ha too, so we will get to that in due time. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Brian. Brian from New Hampshire.
Hey, Brian.
How are you? Yeah, I'm God, I'm sorry to hear that. I don't know what to make. First of all, I was just hoping that your West Virginia basketball team was going to go to the final game at least. But I hope those Butler Bulldogs can upset the Duke University upstarts that think they're the Harvard of the South.
Yeah, the shiny-faced sons of privilege.
Yeah, as a Harvard extension, not a real Harvard Day College, and my name ain't Brian Roosevelt, but as a Harvard alumni of sorts, I don't like that. They used to call University of Texas El Paso the Harvard on the border there. Its academics definitely were not up to par for that. Your local high school there in Huntington, West Virginia, whatever, it would surpass a lot of. But I don't want UTEP had great basketball teams for years, though. They had a great coach there. I forget the man's name. But I'm sorry to hear that. Butler University, though, I looked them up. They're in Indianapolis. They have an interesting school there. I didn't even know that's where they were. I thought it was, might be Butler, PA, Pennsylvania.
Right. Kurt Vonnegut's grandfather, my hero, Kurt Vonnegut. Kurt Vonnegut's grandfather was a groundskeeper there.
All right. No, that's nothing. That's how a university runs, for God's sake. That's how we get our energy, is spoiled breaths like Brian. I admit it. I was whining all weekend. The water heater broke here, an electric water heater, yes, on a Saturday on this Easter weekend. But at this point, I can't. I'm pricing them at Sears and other places there. But I'm looking into if I can possibly afford the new point of source or whatever the water heaters, that just the water that you need. I don't wash my clothes with nothing but cold water. This time of year, I can get into where I can take a cold shower. Most of it. It's better that Brian doesn't need too much coffee to wake up anyways. He might as well use the cold water. But, the fact is, we did manage, I believe, here in New Hampshire, the Sierra Club with the other people, their activism. They had two, I think they were huge coal fired plants too, and I think they were Appalachian or West Virginian coal there. I think they're down to one, but it still doesn't, that's a deadly, primitive, beneath fossil fuels, a type of dirty energy. Coal is probably the worst on the planet.
Yeah, it really is. It is.
Yeah.
If you could imagine, burning coal.
Oil is cleaner, if that's possible.
Yeah. Well, that burning coal is dirtier than burning dung.
My God, that's what a lot of the Chinese peasants used to do if they haven't been moved to factories or to the
India, Africa, sure.
To those corporate coal mines in China, that so-called communist workers' republic there in China now. Though those bastards are, I first of all, I don't know why they got all of our scrap iron, why it was immediately given to them after, all the damage there, the crime scene evidence there at September 11th attacks, all that steel. But the fact is, I know what you're saying there, Baba. We are insensitive to the cost, especially to the people of the Appalachian areas, that the cost you people pay. I'm trying to clean it up. I've still got to keep it at bay there. I still got storm damages to go through and all that. Everybody's got problems there. But that rusty water coming out of the water heater there, that's had it. That I got to replace it. But that rusty water, that's almost evocative of too much of the supposed alleged drinking water for the too many people in West Virginia and areas, I believe it's areas of Ohio too or something, where isn't mountaintop removal is not.
Mountaintop Virginia. Removal takes place in Virginia, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee.
Oh, okay, Kentucky and Tennessee.
And wherever it goes, poisoned water is in its wake.
That's right. I don't know what to say. I was going to talk about Afghanistan, and it's. Talk about stubborn mountain hill people again. The people, the Afghan people there, and going back over, it's in Russia too, they're talking about the heroin epidemic is killing people, many young people, especially in Soviet Siberian cities, former Soviet, now Russian Siberian cities, and in Moscow, and it's killing more people than even those, the lunatics there that blew up the subway there or whatever, there's a little Chechen girl, a teenage girl that blew herself up. It's evil what they did in that subway. It's evil what happened on September 11th, and we didn't get the official story there. But you look at that little girl, that child, that Chechen girl who blew herself up because They are so dehumanized, Muslims in the Russian Orthodox Christianity. It's its own right-wing version of hateful religion against Muslims, against Catholics, against anything not Eastern Orthodox, you know. And the Russians have gotten back into that since the communists fell, and it's a bad thing. That's not a good thing. It hasn't provided anything like a stable basis for corporations there in Russia.
Oh, you know, Brian, months back I was sent a story about a convent, a Russian Orthodox convent that had reopened, and of course it was holy and sacred and magic and all of that hoo-ha. Yeah. And
like that holy pope on this last weekend, that the guy doesn't want to take blame for anything that ought to be able to impeach popes as well.
Yeah, thousands of little rape boys. That's petty gossip. Yeah, petty gossip. But no, in the Russian case, lo and behold, this convent had reopened, and the mother superior was strong-arming peasant farmers around to get their land for the church, and telling them that if they didn't give up the land, that she would make personally sure that they were cursed by God. Now, knowing that...
Loose the Cossacks are back upon them. The Cossacks are back. You know, the Russians have their... They went eastward like we Americans went westward with our Manifest Destiny. Our cowboys, their cowboys basically were the Cossacks, which is Cossack is like Kazakh, Turkic people of Kazakhstan. They took on a lot of the habits of the nomadic Turkic peoples there. But they're mostly shepherds. This bigotry that used to put the word Turk along with barbarian, the most Turkic people are just peaceful shepherds. They brought Buddhism into China, the celestial blue Turkic horde, Khanite, but anyways, the Russians had that Slavic stubbornness. They got it's part of it as a Turkic stubbornness as part of their ancestry, and yet they still they harbor these hatreds. It's at its worst always, and for some reason in the Caucasus, in Chechnya, in you know the Georgians. What happened in there in August 2008? They brought that on themselves. The Blackwater was in there with their thugs. They murdered 20 Russian peacekeepers in cold blood. You know that kind of. But the other areas there, Chechens and that. From Dagestan, other Muslims are subhuman people to too many.
And do you wonder? Is it any wonder to you, Brian, that one of the first things that the framers of the October Revolution of 1917 realized was the first thing they had to do if they were going to build a unified state was get rid of religion?
Yeah, that they were smart on that, and that's what our founding fathers did. The exact same thing, or basically in their own Enlightenment viewpoint.
Yeah, they tried to neutralize the effect of religion.
Just the deistic type of influence on them. Of course, the Ten Commandments and the 20 or 30 original Old Testament commandments, and every religion has ideas of spirituality and morality all over the world, regardless of race or so-called ethnic group and all this. They can be a guidepost, but they don't, with theological governance where the Bible rules America and the Quran rules Iran. If we will just look at Iran with those crazy bastards there, those Ayatollahs, and what they've done to their brave Iranian, the young people there, young women there, they want so much, and invading them is only going to make the conservatives there that much stronger. America, we need to work with their reformers from within, but the people within these Muslim countries there, like the one Muslim country that I know of in the history, the Republic of Turkey under Kemal Atatürk, is one local nationalistic reforming modernist Muslim movement, but there are other people around Pakistan and other countries, Muslim countries all over the world, that do want modern, more modern way, and they don't want military rule. They have these nuts in Indonesia too. These are our allies now that oppress all their minority peoples there, but they're still our allies because they'll capture this or that alleged Al-Qaeda suspect. But, you know, we know from the Al-Zubaydah testimony there, and Jason Leopold, the great reporter there, he's brought it out there that all the torture of Zubaydah that brought out that was supposed to be, that was the so-called information drawn from torture that told us that KSM, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, was the mastermind of all that September 11th. And it's all a bunch of crap like September 11th itself. But it's the same thing. That's what they've done to you're all working class people, good people, that buries the American people in mines to their death. God love those people there. They need our prayers, but They need strong unions, first of all. Like you're saying, they're the safety rates there in the union mines is something that they need, and they need to get rid of mountaintop removal, of course. But, you know, Bob, I was going to talk about Afghanistan and just that opium that's coming out of there. Now our own U.S. military is looking the other way. It's killing people all over the world.
Well, another one of the things that's in the stack this evening is this this video that was released by WikiLeaks today.
Okay.
An organization that is coming under increasing pressure from a number of governments around the world because it's becoming a repository of things that are profoundly embarrassing to various and sundry governments, and what we found out today was quite stunning, and I've got it in my stacks for later. Suffice to say that the thumbnail of it is that it turns out that the United States government and the United States military has covered up an outright murder in Baghdad. An Apache gunship opened fire on a group of journalists.
Oh God!
A couple of years back,
yeah,
killed them in cold blood. And later claimed that they had armed gunmen around them, and that was who they were firing on. The video shows clearly. The video shows clearly, Brian, that there were no gunmen anywhere around, and that they were shooting at the cameras.
And the that's Iraq and it's Afghanistan, going back to long before the Soviets invade, or well, at least a couple of years before. There was a socialist, not a pro-Marxist, not a hardline Soviet government, but a socialist reforming Afghan government there, very highly secular. Women were going to universities. There were many women lawyers, women professors, etc. And the militants, the Islamic hardliners there, people like Zubig, I can't pronounce the name, but Mr. Brzezinski and others in the Carter administration, late in the Carter administration, they started arming them through the CIA. And that's the thing that brought the government close to toppling, where the Russians would send in a few special forces. They didn't want to really send in a heavy amount of troops there, but they kept the Brzezinski and the American CIA kept pushing them and pushing them and pushing Afghanistan deeper into civil war when they had a popularly elected socialist democratic government there, like a Swedish government, where as close as you can get to that in the Afghan version. And those people working it out themselves, but as long as foreigners didn't intervene, from the 60s and 70s, for many American and other European hippies and all that, so counterculture people would go to Afghanistan, yes, for the hashish and other, but also because the government was very tolerant. It was reforming. They had gotten rid of the king, too. But the CIA ruined all that, and eventually it did cajole and it pricked the Soviets enough where they did an invasion there of more than 100,000 troops. And that's where we have the so-called war against evil, the evil empire invaded and all. It was none of that. That's not the truth of the history, like so many other things, Bob. And I'm sure you'll find out about the truth about the death, the mass murders, mass manslaughter might be the legal term, what's happened to those poor coal miners. You'll find out it's the same free market, the American domestic version of the neocons and fascist libertarians, these same bastards, they're the anti-union bastards, anti-American bastards, that have allowed whatever happened in that mine there with those poor men trapped. All I'll do, I'm going to say some prayers for those men, but I pray, you know, I'm definitely switching over to Episcopalianism. This Catholic Church has driven me out of it forever, Bob. They call that the Anglican Church or the Church of England. It's kind of like Catholic light, I guess, many people call it. And that's where they've driven me. But I still love my Catholic relatives and friends, and they're very good people, individual Catholics. I know countless numbers of them were good-hearted people. But this Pope and these bastards there, what they've done to those children, they think they can do it with impunity. I really believe in the Catholic vision, real Christian vision of an afterlife. And, you know, it's like Tom Jefferson said, that so-called, he wasn't an atheist, but he wasn't a born-again Christian either. But he says, I shudder to think that I realize that that God is a just God. You know, when you think about that, the kind
if you get what's coming, if you get, because under those circumstances, none of us pray for mercy, pray for justice. We all pray for mercy. Brian, I've got a couple of updates on the story. I need to roll along. I'll talk to you later, okay?
Little Mountaineers, there's always next year for them.
Absolutely. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's Brian calling from New Hampshire. And just to update you, the story about it, by the way, has been posted on my Facebook page by David in South Carolina on my wall there. If you're not friended up with me, you can always hook up I admit everybody. But Sue has also is also following it. Channel 13 News in Charleston reporting that information from state mining officials confirms that six human beings are dead from the mine explosion. 21 people are still missing. Massey Energy, of course, confirming the explosion, but stating only that rescue teams are on the way to help those who are trapped. This isn't too awfully far from another town called Eccles. Eccles, West Virginia, was a deep mine that in the 1920s, or maybe as far back as 1909, I can't remember off the top of my head, over 100 miners were killed in an explosion there, and their bodies were never recovered. Now, International Coal Group, the same group of corporatist sleaze merchants who brought you the Sago disaster, have reopened deep mining at Eccles, and every day they dump their coal waste. Every day they dump their coal waste down the hole where those 100 or more miners died, where their bodies are yet at rest, unrecovered, and are buried in toxic coal filth. Such is the nature of the friends of coal. Oh, by the way, yeah, Sue noting there is a certain irony that the disaster came today when Allegheny Power just reached a settlement to increase my power bill and the power bills of all those who live in this state. And eventually, because eventually the price of a ton of coal will reflect whatever payouts are made to the survivors of this disaster. It will, of course, be passed on to us in our bill, because God forbid that Massey Energy pay for its own hell and damnation. Gags your gut. It just gags your gut. I'm trying to find out exactly what else is going on. I have a screen capture here from the Friends of Coal. It's a grab of Ken Ward's story about the disaster itself. Next to it is an advertisement.
Don't let the EPA destroy Appalachian jobs. New regulations imposed by bureaucrats at the Environmental Protection Agency will devastate Appalachia's coal economy, destroying jobs, communities, and a way of life that threatened the livelihoods of thousands of families in West Virginia, Kentucky, Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Tennessee. The Federation for American Coal Energy and Security, the Faces of Coal,
you remember them, the ones that use stock photos for their ads.
Calls on our elected representatives to block this abuse of regulatory power and protect Appalachian jobs.
Well, I know of six Appalachian jobs that are gone now. Well, no, the jobs aren't. See, that's the nice thing about a coal company. Right now, there is a bean counter inside Massey Energy who is calculating how much it will cost them to pay off the survivors and the widows and the orphans. And that's a pretty quick calculation. But what they're really working hard on is trying to figure out how much it's going to cost to replace them any machinery that might have been hurt.
Don't let the EPA destroy Appalachian jobs. Massey Energy is doing a good enough job destroying Appalachian lives.
Advertisement. Your ad here. Thanks to our good friend Danny Chodos, for passing that along. Of course, the feces of coal would say that, well, we don't have any power over what the ads are. No, you do have power. You can call your web guy and say, make sure that that thing doesn't show up next to the story of 6 dead West Virginians and 21 missing and possibly dead. But it's okay. It's okay. Because you know what? West Virginians, early in their history, when they were first being enslaved, rebelled against it and formed unions and engaged in a struggle for human rights. But we have been slaves so long that our chains sit lightly upon us. Or so we think, until a day like today. And so, Don Blankenship need not worry. Because there will be no mass of West Virginians with torches and pitchforks marching on his comfortable home. The United Mine Workers of America is so weak, it couldn't even mount a letter-writing campaign against Massey Energy, let alone strike and create a work stoppage at a non-union death trap. Massey need not worry at all. We will grieve and go back to work. Sue also sending along saying, here's an article that came down on Sunday's News Dump memory hole while everyone was off celebrating Easter. The Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration is being faulted in a new government report for doing a shoddy job keeping its inspectors trained. And that's true as far as it goes. But you know what? The phone gets picked up before the inspector ever goes to the mine. And then the guys are all told to put on their breathing gear and their dust masks. And as soon as the inspector's gone, they're told them to take them off and hang them out in the wind so that they'll stay clean for the next time that the inspector comes. People are still dying from black lung. Largely preventable. I don't know how we reset the program. I don't know how we get away from this. But we will try. I hope you understand, there was no way I could ignore this. Just to share something with you, back when, right after WVU lost to Duke, it was heartbreaking. Right after WVU lost to Duke on Saturday night, I posted on my Facebook page, and I haven't changed it since. Probably should during the break. But I wrote, in a way, the Duke game ended as it should have. The working class folks got whipped by the shiny-faced sons of privilege who got away with breaking the rules at will. That's the history of Appalachia in a nutshell. Only it transpired in 40 minutes on a basketball court on Monday. Whew, God, I hate myself sometimes. On Monday, West Virginia's working class folks will go back to work, heads unbowed. We're hillbillies. That's our life. But we never cease the struggle. And it's true. Once upon a time in this state, a disaster like what has transpired near Neoma would have been enough to make every miner dump out his water and walk off the job. And say nobody goes back in anywhere. Not a lump of coal moves until we make sure this doesn't happen again. But real coal miners who go underground will continue to go underground on the next shift and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. Because they have no other choice. And they lack the power. Whether they're union or non-union. And on mountaintop removal jobs, which are not mining jobs, they will continue to pat themselves on the back and poison our communities. And talk about how they're powering America. At the same time that they're toxifying their own beloveds. We're hillbillies. It's what we do. Let's go to the phones real quick. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin formerly from Brooklyn.
Now of Korea. What's up, Kevin?
How are you, man?
Tough night.
It's a double whammy for you, man. My heart reaches out for you. You know, the coal incident and, you know, the Mountaineers. I was really rooting for them, too.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, because, you know, West Virginia does need a spark of hope, even if it is through basketball. You know.
Well, we got plenty to be proud of there, and they went about it in workmanlike fashion, just like West Virginians go about their daily lives.
Yeah. Okay, but on that note, what the hell happened to the country I just happen to have a passport from in the 3 weeks I've been gone?
Oh, which part?
Everywhere, man. I get it all on BBC. You mean
you're actually getting some fairly straightforward information for a change? Wow.
Oh, yes. And it's like, oh, my God. You know, it's just like, my God. What the hell has happened? And you know what? One thing you have to say about the Bush family, the one thing I do agree with them, and this burns my heart to...
You there, Kevin?
Hello?
Yeah, keep going. Yeah.
It burns my heart to say it, but they were right about John McCain. He is the Manchurian candidate.
Oh, that image of him standing behind Sarah Palin when she said he was so old he was at the first Tea Party?
Yeah.
If he weren't John McCain, I could have almost felt sorry for him there, Kevin.
Yeah, you know, but that man, you know, I had some admiration for him or respect for him back in 2000. Now, oh my God, he's just, and I'm talking like a few millimeters above Lieberman. He would sleep with any animal to have power. He will lay with any animal. But I'm just shocked. You know, it's like, it's funny being over here and looking over. First of all, I've never felt so much unstressed in the past 10 years.
Well, is it tangible over there, too, or is it just because you're paying attention?
I'm saying unstressed. That means... My stress, I'm so stress-free, it's not funny now.
Oh, okay, I understand.
And it's been years since I felt this way. It really has. You know, it's like my job is going great. You know, there are a few cultural differences, but, you know, you overcome them. But it's just like a totally different world out here. And, you know, it feels... good where, okay, I could walk into a doctor, any doctor I want, because I have an alien residency card, and get very great treatment.
How's your Korean coming along?
Well, that's a different story, but you know, I'm still giving it a try. But, you know, okay, one thing I accept, and one thing you have to be reminded of, okay, I am a foreigner. Anything you say, do, or whatever, you're a foreigner here.
Sure.
But to me, that's acceptable because in America, where we say we're all Americans, but don't live up to that spirit. That's what disagrees with me. You know, we always like to tout how we're an all-inclusive society and all, but the tea bag has proven. The Sarah Palin's, that's not the real America.
And yet, oddly enough, she has a show called exactly that now. Real American Stories.
Exactly. Koreans will tell you, yes, you are a foreigner, but you know what they'll also say? You're a human being. And that's all I want, yeah. You know, you're a human being, and you're entitled to certain things as a human being. And a fellow human being cares for the sick. He's able to make a decent living. It's not the privilege of a few elite, you know. And, yes, there's poverty out here, but it's not, I guess I'm seeing it differently, and I'm probably, since I'm still kind of new here, seeing things through rose-colored lenses, but it's a different kind of poverty. It's not a spiritual poverty. It's more of a, okay, we're going to probably have to do without getting the latest whatever.
Right.
Use last year's model. It's not a choice between starvation and medicine. Okay?
Yeah, it's not that kind of sick choice.
Yes. Whether you eat or you go to the doctor. You know, and yes, there are people, and, you know, like I teach, as you know, I teach English over here. And, yeah, there's some students that are more out, and you can always tell. The ones with the tighter uniforms are usually the ones who have left because, or they inherited my brother and sister's hand-me-downs.
Sure.
And the kid, but, you know, they're all equal. Everybody's subject to the law here. Everyone. Regardless of what class you come from. You know, all the kids have to clean up the schools. They're responsible for the maintenance of the schools. It's the kids that work the cafeteria mostly. You know, they have adult support staff. But it's the kids that basically keep the do the cleaning and all that. And regardless of what class you come from, meaning rich, poor, whatever, you all have to clean and maintain the school because that's the signal of education is not free.
I wonder if we could pull something like that off here. I sincerely doubt it.
No, because they'll say slavery and all this other nonsense.
Well, we can't even manage to hold a prom without trying to stick a thumb in a child's eye for being gay. That's in the stack for later in the evening. But, yeah, it's news coming out of Mississippi is absolutely sickening tonight.
Yeah. Well, it's just, you know, it's like America can learn a lot from here. Really, a lot. And another thing is they make everything here. Everything is made and produced right here.
That's because they protect their markets.
And also that, I tell you one thing, yeah, they may be using a lot of coal and oil here. I don't doubt. But here has, and it's in my poverty too, the biggest windmill and solar panel generators in Southeast.
Look, any enlightened society is going to look up and go, hey, look at the big, bright, shiny thing in the sky. That's free. Why would you not? The only reason you wouldn't is if your country is so in the absolute death grip of moneyed corporate interests who are threatened by something like that, that you can't. And that, of course, is the United States, in a nutshell.
Yeah. And I tell you, because I live in the surrounding province of Seoul, which is the Gyeonggi province, and they have, I think, one of the biggest windmill farms and solar generators in Southeast Asia. You know, and it's so strange here. You know, I'm 10 miles away from the world's largest demilitarized zone. And on the other side is a drunk whatever with an inferiority complex. But I've never felt so much at peace in my life, in years. It's been years. I shouldn't say in my life. It's been years. You know. It's the fifth largest land army on the face of the planet on the other side, Bob.
Yeah.
And it's run by an alcoholic madman with an inferiority complex.
Classic little man complex, yes.
Yeah. But you know what? It's all good to me. It's all good to me. The people are friendly here. You know, they talk about how blacks and Koreans don't get along in the States and the news. Koreans are the nicest people on the planet.
Nice. Sure, that has nothing to do with Korean people. That has everything to do in the world to do with American people.
Yes.
The longer you're there, the more quickly you'll figure it out.
Well, not only that, it's just, I think Koreans come to America, the ones that came to America are suffering from traumatization. So they just shut down. And they cannot be there.
This is a scary place.
It is, it is. And I'm realizing that. And I'm realizing that. Okay, because there are plenty of Korean Americans where I live, in Brooklyn, most of them merchants, and they would never do what they do here. Like, Koreans will come up and, you know, like the kids would like to touch, because I have, you know, hair on my forearms, and that's a very strange thing to an Asian, to have body hair. And they'll come and stroke my hairy hairs and all, because they're just curious. And they'll come up, and the boys will sometimes come up and hug me, you know, and the men will come, you know, and the women will come up and, you know, they're very affectionate people. At first, it might have been disconcerting, but they're just curious. You know, that's what they do. You know, in the United States, if they were to do that, they would get killed, especially New York or any other city. You know, it's a very, you know, it's like, I'm glad I came here. Even if I, you know, whether I stay here for years or a year or even whatever, you know, I'm glad I came here. I really am. Yeah.
It will change you. Well, Kevin, it's awfully good to hear from you, my friend. I'm glad to hear that you're settling in and doing well. And I hope we will hear again from you soon.
Yeah, like I said, I'm getting ready to go to work in a few minutes anyway, but I just wanted to touch base and reach out. Most likely you'll be getting calls from me on Saturday. What is my Saturday or your Friday?
Okay, great. Well, I'll look forward to them. We all will, Kevin.
Okay, brother.
All right, take care and have a great day.
Yeah, you too, bro.
Bye now. Formerly of Brooklyn and now of the greater Seoul, South Korea area, that is our pal, Kevin. Glad to know that he's there, he's safe, and sounds, you tell me if I'm wrong, but sounds like pretty doggone happy. What to do? Let's see. You know what? It's about 3 minutes before the hour. I think... I think a little break is called for. You know the number if you want to chime in, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel. That's 304-658-3333. Email rolls into bobkincaid@gmail.com. It's all so very easy, because this is conversation radio. This is, in fact, the horn. It's a race.
and there ain't no room for someone in second place. I rush and rush until that no fun. All I really gotta do is live and die, but I'm in a hurry and don't know why. I'm in a hurry to get things done. Oh, I rush and rush until that no fun. All I really gotta do is live and die, but I'm in a hurry and don't know why. I'm in a hurry to get things done. Oh, I rush and rush until life's no fun. All I really gotta do is live and die, but I'm in a hurry and don't know why. We'll be right back.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Seven and a half minutes past the hour, and I'm trying to just collect myself. That last song, yeah, well, you probably recognized Alabama, the first song. Well, the second song, though, is a gorgeous thing. It's called The Last Song I Will Write, from Jason Isbell, his album Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit. And there is a line in that song, and it's why I chose to play it, where he sings about crawling from crumbling coal mines. And, look, I'll go ahead and tell you, I'm a mess. And if I can, I'll explain to you a little bit about why. And I'm sorry for not covering the real news this evening. But around here, this is real news. And this isn't a local program, it's a global program, and I recognize that, and I apologize to you. I should probably be talking about some Republican doing something awful somewhere. But it ain't in me right now. This is Moran Monday. I should be laughing my fool ass off right now, but it ain't in me right now. There are very few people who live in this state who do not have, at some level, maybe a generation, two generations, three, sometimes four generations back, a coal mine slave in their background. If you recall Jeff Biggers talking to us, you will remember that the very first coal was mined in this region by real slaves, African slaves who were sent into pits to die in Virginia. And when slavery was ended, the corporatists, unregulated, untouched, utterly lawless and ruthless, replaced black slaves with white ones that they manipulated with economics instead of law. Not that law wasn't used as well. And once upon a time in Appalachian coal mining communities, there were whistles that could be heard throughout the town that would blow when disaster struck. Now, however, most of southern West Virginia has been depopulated, so it's a little different. Once upon a time, when the whistle blew, everybody in town would head running for the mine. Some merely to find out the news of whether they were an orphan or a widow, whether a father, a brother, a grandfather was dead, and many others willing, hoping just to get to do something to try to alleviate the suffering and get to the ones who were in the hole. And even though there's no whistle to be heard, I don't know but what a few generations of that kind of life doesn't get to you on a genetic level. I have never been in a coal mine. My father and mother made it their life's work to make sure that I wasn't. I was raised in Alabama as far away from a coal mine as they could get, because my parents wanted to make sure that that was not my lot in life. But I'm back here now. And lo and behold, if news like this doesn't bring tears of absolute goddamnable fury to my eyes and an urge to run, to go, to do something, to try to help. So that's part of it. The other part of the fury, well, it's this. Sue found Don Blankenship's statement. This is a Massey Energy mine. Massey Energy shares dropped almost 6% right after the explosion. I guess that means Don's a little less rich, while six and maybe more human beings are a lot less alive. You realize that Don Blankenship is not worth a single life that was lost today. Don Blankenship is, at best, barely a human being, if that. But he did issue a statement.
"We're uncertain as to what happened, but we are working diligently on rescue efforts, and we are in contact with all of the appropriate agencies."
That's it. That's all, folks, from Don Blankenship. There's only one problem. During the break, I spent part of my time trying to read what little reportage there is to be had thus far. We know for a fact that West Virginia Governor Joe Manchin was once again out of town on a personal trip. Officials say he's preparing to return to the state. You might recall that when Sago went down, he was in New Orleans or in Atlanta for the Sugar Bowl that was displaced by Katrina, and he had to come home from that. My guess is he's in Indianapolis right now and trying to come home. But this is telling. This is telling. It is being reported that the explosion occurred about 3 p.m. Okay? This is not complicated, so just keep this in mind. The explosion happened at about 3 p.m. Now, this is the important part. This is the statement from the U.S. Mine Safety and Health Administration spokeswoman Amy Louvier. She says, at approximately 3:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, the Mine Safety and Health Administration was notified of a mine explosion at the Upper Big Branch South Mine Performance Coal Company in Whitesville, West Virginia. MSHA District Manager Robert Hardman is on the scene. Along with a family liaison, rescue efforts are underway. That's the statement. Do some quick math. That's 30 minutes between the explosion and MSHA being notified. 30 minutes. It took Massey Energy to notify the regulatory agency that is critically important in any disaster such as this. 30 minutes. 30 minutes! How long does it take to dial 911? How long does it take to say, there's been an explosion here? Send rescue crews. How long does that take? Well, you just found out. How long does it take? Did they have to dig her? I mean, come on, this is mad. How long did it take to find the phone number for the state mine safety authorities? How long did it take? So that MSHA is only notified a full half hour after the disaster has taken place. You know what those 30 minutes were for? Those 30 minutes were for ass covering. Those 30 minutes were corporate saying, what do we say? Those 30 minutes were notifying Don Blankenship before anyone else got notified. That's what those 30 minutes were. 30 precious minutes! Oh, and by the way, you may remember me mentioning a week or so ago that there had been a report of an earthquake in West Virginia over the weekend. Well, it was later determined that that might probably wasn't an earthquake, because we're not earthquake prone, even a little bit. On the other hand, we are prone to collapses inside old mines, many of which we have no idea where they are. The old pillars give way, and the mountain settles down. Sometimes the mountain blows out. But you see, coal companies don't view mountains as system or mountains as process. Coal companies see mountains as profit sources. The Earth's crust floats, and we know this. We know, you know, I don't care what Don Blankenship cares to deny. That evil son of a bitch can't deny plate tectonics, and he cannot deny the composition of the Earth as long as he is intent on digging in it. And these mountains are fluid things, and they are connected one to the other, to the other, to the next, to the next, to the next. And what happens in one tells on another. But coal companies don't realize that. The only thing coal companies realize is that there is a desire to make more money. But you know what? Let's see. What did they blame Sago on? Oh, yeah. Sago was blamed on lightning inside a coal mine. Yeah, right. Wait. Now, I'm not getting out my tattered purple robe with the frayed moons and star, frayed purple robe with the tattered moons and stars on it or anything. I don't have, there's not a magic eight ball anywhere near me. But you just wait. You just wait. Wait till the Massey Flax and Hacks put out that, well, we think there was an earthquake. Right? And why would they do that? Well, because there's a little place in Utah called Crandall Canyon, where Bob Murray's operation was pulling pillars, and the mountain collapsed. And Bob Murray, who is I don't know. It's a coin toss as to who's more evil, Don Blankenship or Bob Murray. They're both pretty much cut from the same filthy cloth. Bob Murray blamed an earthquake on a disaster that was caused by his insatiable greed. So don't be surprised. Meanwhile, over on my Facebook page, a right-wing lady is telling me, because I posted a few minutes ago during the break, coal keeps the lights on in West Virginia funeral home. 6 dead, 21 missing in Massey mine explosion. Remember them when you leave that room with the lights on. And a pro-Massey lady named Pamela Vines says, Bob, this is not the time nor the place. We have family members that we are all waiting for word on. Why do you not ask for prayers at this time? I'm sorry, but this is breaking our hearts. Let me do this real quick. I'm not calling for prayers, Pamela, because I don't believe in magic. I'm calling for those responsible for this, Perrin, Blankenship et al., to be punished to the full extent of the law. Nah, that's wrong. Not going to do that to her. I'm not calling for prayers, Pamela, because these miners need help, not magic. How's that? Kate says, don't apologize. Stop it. Just keep talking us through this. Thanks for your history and stories. Big old hug. This is, Brian said, Bob, I just lit a votive candle for those 6 brave coal miners that are in heaven, at the least. So let's see if we can figure out a way through this. You know, that Pamela Vines woman acting like she's the only one grieving, the only one worried, and calling for prayer. Live on hay, pray and pray. Live on hay, day by day. There'll be pie in the sky when you die. You know what those miners needed a lot more? Those miners needed for the emergency authorities to be notified sooner than a half an hour after the disaster. That's what they needed. The emergency response teams needed to be notified before Don Blankenship was notified, before the PR people were notified, before the accountants were notified. That's what they needed. Sweet Jesus. It's 2010! And this is still happening. Why? We have the technology. We have a sun in the sky that's going to burn for a couple more billion years and could power this entire nation. We have wind that blows across this entire continent and doesn't show any signs of letting up.
and we are still engaged in the barbarity of sending human beings miles beneath the surface of the earth to dig out toxic waste from 50 million years ago so we can keep our goddamn lights on? Why? It is 2010! Someone, please tell Barack Obama that coal has no place in civilized society anymore. That if we would have a future, we must begin working on it now. And not abandon Appalachia to a sick and sorry and blood-soaked fate that has been our lot for 150 years! It is 2010. Isn't it time we got past this barbaric approach to energy production? I feel like the bottom of my guts falling out. And meanwhile, with 6 dead and 21 missing, and that's the headline at ABC News. There's a bar above it that says, "Watch video, watch! Tiger blown away by Masters response, watch! Tiger Woods, I need to be a better man, watch! Did Tiger Woods want to get caught? Watch Badu on video, my butt naked truth!" Stuff like that. It makes me think we're pretty well screwed. Brian saying, "You're right, Bob. Those miners still trapped need action, not just mere prayers. Faith without works is dead, as the book says." I don't know if there's anyone still on the line. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Hello? Nope, no one on the line. So, I'm going to try to figure out a way to transition away from this, but it is not proving easy. We are halfway through the program, and an hour and a half longer than I thought I would make it. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
You walk with me, was cold in the mountain. Till a man from the northeast arrived. Waving $100 bills, said, I'll pay you for your minerals. But he never left Harlan alive. Grandma sold out cheap, and they moved west of Pineville to a farm where baby Richland River winds. And I bet they danced them a jig, and they laughed and sang a new song. Who said we never leave Harlan alive? The sun comes up about 10 in the morning, and the sun goes down about 3 in the day, and you fill your cup with whatever bitter brew you're drinking, and you spend your life digging coal from the bottom of your grave.
Three minutes before the hour, a little over halfway through the program this evening, this Monday night edition of The Horn and Bob. And, you know, rumor has it they're going to put an underground mine in just out the road from where my wife, I, and our little family live. And if we're here long enough, what's happened down in the western end of Raleigh County will happen here. But you know what? It'll happen somewhere in Appalachia at any given time. Granted, union holes are safer than non-union holes. That's just a fact, because the working people there have somewhat of an, at least an arguably more equal footing with management and they can say, ain't nobody going in that hole till it's safe. But it's a rotten, miserable, deadly business that takes good human beings and makes nothing but sad, sickened, beat up, broke down, burnt out people of them. You and me, we could get together for a biscuit, and they're not very good ones, frankly, about 2 miles from here. And while we waited for our biscuit to come up and our coffee to get poured some breakfast morning, I could show you one of those panoramic photographs. You know, the ones where it looks like there's a curve, but there's not, because the camera was a slow exposure on a motorized track. And this particular photograph was shot probably 3 years before my father was born. And it shows a whole bunch of skinny, grimy men standing behind a railroad track. They got their lunch buckets. Some of them still got their lamps on their heads. Those are carbide lamps. Fascinating stuff, carbide. And in that photograph is my grandfather, three uncles, and my great-grandfather. And just about everybody in this little town is still related to someone in that photograph. And not one of the individuals in that photograph, though he may have lived to a reasonably old age, came to a good end. In some form or another, coal killed all of them. They weren't paid in American money. They lived in housing that the coal company selected for them, and in which they lived at sufferance. Those coal company houses still stand in my little community. Along about right center field of the town's ball yard is the house where my father was born. Next to it, the house where his best friend growing up was born. And they were born at the sufferance of the coal company, as the coal company waited for another generation to get old enough to send into those holes to satisfy that which may never be satisfied, that which is insatiable corporate greed that knows no respect for anything approaching something you and I would know as human rights. So let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello. Jim, what's up?
Not a bunch. Very sorry to hear about the problem up there, unfortunately. I'll tell you, Bob, anytime you go underground, whether you're caving, whether you're mining or whatever, it is a occupation or a sport not for the faint of heart, that's for sure.
It absolutely is. And when you're doing that underground and using explosives?
Oh, yeah. Good Lord, yes. And, you know, and proper safety precautions aren't taken, and, you know, all they want is basically the money, and they don't care about human life. It gives it
right, because there's another guy waiting to take his job.
Well, that's their attitude. You know, it's just like the opening scene of Blazing Saddles when he told him to put that wheel car in the quicksand, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
That chink of day's wages are sleeping on the job.
There you go. You know, the same story obtained with the drilling of the Hawk's Nest Tunnel just down the mountain from where I live. If a man came out coughing and said he couldn't work anymore, he was fired, set off to die, and there was another man waiting to take his job. Because, you know, economic oppression thrives on the desperation of people who have this the compulsion to feed their families.
Well, you know, I think that being from the South, I can tell you this. There were plantations where slaves were put better treated than coal miners.
Yes. Oh, yes.
There really were.
Well,
any apology for slavery? Not at all. But
no. I understand what you're saying. Look, the transition from the Southern slave economy to basically to the sharecrop economy, you had to pay people, but all you had to do was make sure they were underpaid and they were as good as enslaved. You know, they took it an extra step forward in the coal fields and didn't even pay them in money.
Yeah, paid them in scrip, didn't they?
Yeah. That was only redeemable at the company store. It wasn't real money. It's like if you got paid in newspaper coupons. You know, you can eat all you want, but you can only eat off the coupons that are spendable at McDonald's.
And, of course, those items were exorbitantly priced so as to what they could buy on the economy, right?
Right. And that way it kept that, because if you wanted something nice, maybe a bolt of cloth for your wife to make dresses out of or something, you'd have to go in the hole on your own paycheck, and you'd wind up owing money to the store, and your next paycheck would be what they called snake, because it would just be a line across the amount, noting that you were being docked for what you already owed. Man, you can't get out. That's a different hole. That's an economic hole you can't get out of.
Yeah.
And it took federal action making that illegal to make them stop doing it.
Yeah, it sort of makes pre-Christmas Ebenezer Scrooge like an angel, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
You know, there's an interesting book by Margaret Brooke White. I don't know if you're familiar with her work.
Very much.
You have seen their faces?
Yes.
You ever seen that book?
Yes, I have.
Well, that's a part of American history that really needs to be, well, people don't need to forget that. The only other thing I have to say is a quantum leap on what we're saying, but I did see on the internet Friday where a urologist on Friday said had a sign pasted on his door, nicely printed, anyone who voted for Barack Obama, do not come for service here because his reforms are already in effect here and I will not treat you.
Yeah, that story broke and the guy wound up on Alan Colmes' radio show and Alan made a complete jackass of him.
That doctor?
Yeah.
You mean he had balls enough to get on the radio and talk like that?
Yep. Well, he tried. Let me see here. I think I can call it up pretty quick.
Does he not remember the Hippocratic Oath?
First do no harm? Yeah, but that doesn't say first do no stupid. But, yeah, he showed up... He showed up on Alan Colmes' radio show, I guess, today, and admitted that he didn't know what he was talking about. Colmes asked him, do you really think the government wants people dead? And Dr. Castle said, well, I think they're cutting off all supportive care, like nursing homes, ambulance services. And he said, what do you mean they're cutting off nursing homes? Well, they're cutting nursing home reimbursements. And, you know, Alan's not a screamer. Alan doesn't lose his temper like I do. Alan's real reasonable and stuff. He says, isn't what they're cutting under the Medicare plan what was really double-dipping? They were getting credits, and they were getting to deduct them at the same time. And then the doctor says, well, you know, I can't tell you exactly what the deal is. And Colmes just asks him, well, if you can't tell us exactly what the deal is, why are you opposing it and fighting against it? Well, I'm not the guy who wrote the plan. But if you don't know what the deal is, why are you speaking out against something you don't know what the deal is? What I get online, just like any other American, what I'm supposed to understand about the bill should be available to me. And then Colmes says, it is. It's been online for a long time. It's also been all over the media.
Well, I think the doctors have really made Medicare their own cash cow anyway. They really have. It's just amazing.
Well, sure they have. You know, the right-wingers like to talk about Medicare and Medicaid fraud, but, you know, there are very few people out there who are going to the doctor fraudulently. It's hard to get a fraudulent case of the flu, Jim.
I'm talking about the doctors.
Oh, I know. And, well, that's what I was leading up to. You know, the single largest case of Medicare fraud was perpetrated by the corporation run by the family of the former Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist.
That asshole?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that guy.
A local TV station in Florida has already spoken to one of Castle's patients, and he said, while the doctor's care has been wonderful, he said, I'm never going back after this political stunt. Keep politics out. I mean, he can have his opinion, but what's the next sign saying? If you're Catholic, you can't come, or if you're an Arab, you can't come in, or if you're a Jew, it has to stop somewhere.
I don't know. Maybe he probably has pictures of Dr. Mengele in his special room in his house.
Well, I don't know that he's got that, Jim, but we do know that he keeps Republican materials in the waiting room.
I don't understand people like that. There's a doctor in Beckley who does that, too.
Well, I go down to my local practitioner, and just about every time I walk in there, lo and behold, the damn television's on Fox. Now, how is that going to help any patient who's sitting in there? God knows it raises. I went back and they put the little cuff on my arm and with the bulb and. Yeah, Bob, your blood pressure's off the chart. I said, well, the next time I come in here, make sure that damn Fox isn't on in the waiting room. That right wing drives me nuts.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I even have my TV set so it skips Fox. I never see it, and I don't want to, because the few times I have watched it, I have just I've just wondered exactly, you know, which one of you idiots is keeping the brain. And I have emailed them that on several occasions. They haven't liked it. I've got some nasty replies back from them.
Typically.
You know, they have that Fox Morning show where they have that woman and those two idiots that sit up there, Brian.
Kilmeade Brian and Steve Doocy.
Whatever his name is. I don't know. It took me to.
And so, yeah, and an attack blonde, sure.
And, you know, it's just.
Well, and if it makes any difference, you might be interested to know, Jim, that Dr. Castle's sign is still up. He's still displaying the sign. By the way, getting a little breaking news in from Sue. She's letting us know that the mine where the explosion took place is not a union operation. But, bless their hearts, the United Mine Workers has said it has personnel nearby and would help non-union Massey if the company asks. And has said it is also ready to help families of workers at the mine. Massey will not ask, Jim. They don't want a union worker anywhere near that godforsaken gassy hole, even if it would mean the salvation of a life.
Well, that goes back to the days when they had the company store and script. I mean, anybody who mentioned the word union, they were fired immediately, and they were turned out of their company-owned house with all their possessions and a buckboard wagon and no mule to pull it.
Right. My grandfather told my father stories, and he told them to me, about the fact that when he was a much younger man, if you had people over for Sunday dinner, if you invited friends over for Sunday dinner to share your supper with you, the coal company outlawed that because they said that constituted union organizing.
And they probably had Pinkertons or whomever they called in to, I guess they probably had stew pigeons who would rat you out if you did, right?
Oh, sure. Absolutely, and the only approved churches were the churches where the union paid the preacher to get in the pulpit and preach that wanting to join a union was Bolshevism.
The Wobblies?
Well, the Wobblies and the UMW, too. Any union was Bolshevik. Any attempt of a worker to stand on his hind legs and be paid a fair day's wage for a fair day's work was communism.
Well, to tell you the truth, we really haven't come that far away from the days of the robber barons, and it looks like we've gone right back to it.
Sadly, you're right. And I don't know, you know, look, the numbers don't lie, Jim. Coal mining, as you noted, anytime you go under the earth, you're right. It's not for the faint of heart.
It's not, it is a dangerous thing. It really is.
But the fact of the matter is, it is more dangerous to go into a non-union mine than it is to a union mine.
Well, because they've taken precautions and things like that. I mean, you know, you can do an awful lot to make things safer. Not totally safe, but safer and more humane and more caring for the people that work for you. By the way, what do you mean by pulling pillars?
I've never been underground, so I'm relying on secondhand information.
Does that mean pulling the old supports that used to pull the used?
Well,
to
no, you mine. What they do is they mine around certain areas of coal, and the coals form the coal that they leave is pillars. And then, in order to drag the last little bit of profit out of the mine, they do something they're not supposed to do. People like Bob Murray do, and they pull pillars. They pull the pillars and let the mountain collapse behind them as they go forward toward the mouth of the mine in order to get the last bit of coal out of the hole.
Well, that's just plain crazy.
It is unless you're one of the people who has vast amounts of stock in the corporation. Then it's good business practice.
You know, I think the pharaohs of Egypt, when they built their pyramids, probably had better business practices than some of these people, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Clayton writing in, Jim, and says, one of those bastards said, I can hire half of the working class to kill off the other half. He says, I can't remember who said it. I just went downstairs to get my carbide lamp. It hasn't been lit in a long time. Can't find any carbide. I can still smell the scent of it, and I remember how hard I had to work not to go into those dark pits. You know, there were a lot of families, a lot of coal mine families that busted ass to make sure that the next generation didn't do what they had done. And the fact of the matter is, the one thing you can't see when you're underground is that great big burning ball of light in the sky that means energy for everybody forever. Meanwhile, as Sue noted earlier, you and me, we just got a rate increase for that cheap coal.
Yeah, we did too. I did too. I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, they're not fooling anybody. They really aren't.
No.
I just don't understand the mindset of these people. I mean, you know, can money and, I guess, money and power just deprive a lot of certain human beings or a lot of human beings of any sense of compassion, humanity, or decency? I call it decency.
Yeah, or, you know, given the season of the year, the essential foundation of Christianity. That too.
Well, I'll say one last thing. This sort of reminds me of some of the stunts that the Nazis pulled when they were putting some of their operations underground and the way they treated their people who did that. You know, the Dora mine where they built those V-2 rockets and
right.
They treated those people so horribly.
Yep.
I can't
Peenemunde.
See a lot of difference, really. I mean, whether you starve a man quickly or starve a man slowly, he still starves.
He still starves, sure. And you know what? Even whether nobody who goes underground comes to a good end. It's just a fact.
No, they don't. Well, I don't know what to say about this. I hope that everything will. I just hope that these six people can be rescued if possible. But you're sure they're dead?
Well, six they sure are. 21 are still reported as missing.
And they don't know what caused it.
Yeah, even at this point, they don't. Even at this point, the Charleston Gazette reporting only a large number of West Virginia coal miners are feared dead or missing this evening. Other organizations are reporting 6 dead, 21 missing.
Well, words can't convey how you feel about something like that. Without sounding trite, I mean, that's other than just to say what I've said. But as far as that urologist in Florida is concerned, that's the window somebody ought to have a huge wrecking ball and put it right through there and maybe get his sorry ass attention.
Yes. But, you know, again, nothing, you know, Don Blankenship has enough money to make sure that nothing happens to him because, of course, it was a it was Performance Coal, which is only a subsidiary of Massey. The other part of the coal dodge, Jim, is the fact that there are shell corporations upon shell corporations. It is literally a shell game, and the whole purpose being to insulate the top dogs from ever being gotten at by legal process or judicial process or God knows the long arm of the criminal statutes.
Kind of sounds like the mafia, doesn't it?
A little bit.
Layers and buffers and stuff like that guy said.
And you know what? Don't think for a minute that Massey Management doesn't have a concept very closely akin to Omerta, the code of silence. You know, you talk, you don't work. So maybe more similarities than you or I are even aware of. Jim, it's good to hear from you, and I thank you for your call.
Take care.
Bye now. That's Jim calling from nearby, and we will continue onward, I think. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, it's Brian. Just real quick again there, Bob. I feel like such a big goddamn baby. I don't have hot water, for God's sakes, and these people are taking their last gasp, perhaps. But this is what we get. If people, Bob, this time it's not going to be like the West Virginia and the Appalachia, what they've gone through. It's not going to be like after the Great Depression, after other economic downturns, after other wars. Because of these neocons, because of this free market libertarian social Darwinism enacted beginning under Ronald Reagan, etc., that West Virginia and Appalachia is coming to your hometown, Americans. You can suck up all the cheap Chinese goods you want and this new iPad, etc., but you remember that January 21st, 2010 Supreme Court ruling for the corporations, that was not done on the planet Mars. That was done in the alleged democracy of
Absolutely.
America.
Yes.
That's right, and it's coming. At this time, it's not going to spare the rest of us and leave places like Watts and Appalachia and Harlem where they're stuck with the isolated pockets of poverty. It's going to be isolated pockets of the elitist, the corporatist, and these bastards. I'm going to pick up the Battle of Blair Mountain. That's how I do things verbally, Bob, that book there. I just was finished. There's not much of a connection there, I know, but the great writer there, he attended Harvard for a time. James Agee was from Knoxville, Tennessee. I guess it's part of that greater Tennessean, fighting Kentuckian, Virginian area. And his relationship with Father, the Episcopalian Father James Fly, and at that time the local, and he attended the local Phillips Exeter Academy over here, two towns over here in Exeter, New Hampshire, in about 1910 or 1915 or so, and he was at the age of 15 he was dating a librarian from Exeter in her early 20s. He was such a mature young man. He was sneaking out the window there in the little town of Exeter to get to. To visit her, to have dates with her, and the school looked the other way there for whatever, but it just, he has some roots there to Knoxville in Tennessee, a brilliant writer there, but I want to get this Battle of Blair Mountain, just the story of it. You've talked about it before, but just the fact of, this concise, dramatic, and authoritative account of the bloody 1921 encounter between the mine workers and mine owners of the West Virginia coalfield.
And that's what I mean, Brian, when I say that early on in our enslavement in Appalachia, we had enough stuff inside us to remember what freedom was like. After 125...
Union groups, workers all over this country have become such sheeple as well, or too many have... They're all anesthetized by that. That's why I don't have cable TV, by this national media. But
well, not just that, but from the moment, remember, that battle of Blair Mountain, we lost. And the Union, the birthing Union movement in West Virginia was crushed like a bug until FDR got into office and the National Labor Relations Act was passed.
Yeah, that's
no sooner did they pass the National Labor Relations Act than, as soon as possible, Republicans started attacking it. One of the nastiest attacks, and one of the nastiest legislative attacks, was the Taft-Hartley Act.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's more at work, and I'm not downplaying what your argument is, Brian.
No.
But there is more at work in the breaking of the unions. Than simple disinformation.
You're hearing this book, The Power of the State, in the write-up of this book, The Battle of Blair Mountain, just a quick couple of sentences there, Bob, and then I'll let you go there. The tragic outcome of the battle between a group of mountain people and the full power of the emerging superstate, with World War One hero and later state senator Billy Mitchell's biplanes ready 15 years before Guernica, you know, the bombing of civilians in the Spanish Civil War, 15 years before Guernica, to bomb civilians is inevitable, but it is Shogun's triumph here to make the reader feel it anew. A minor quibble he talks about where he didn't mention John Sayles Matawan, but he goes on, and it includes people such as the organizer Sid Hatfield and the Pinkerton detective C.E. Lively, and the rest. But there's and the phony red hysteria about these miners there. It was semi like they're most some of the most reflexively American nationalistic people I know of are from your part of the country, Bob. There, and I mean in a good way. I mean in the sense of the populist progressive sense. This goddamn media is taking that all away, but I'm telling people that Appalachia's fate, we're all becoming Appalachia, the United States of Appalachia, under these corporations. We need to wake up to that fact. God love those miners. I hope they're not taking their last gasp, but God love them. That should be abolished, that kind of energy there. I'm going to work even harder to get rid of that one last coal-fired plant here in New Hampshire. I know at least a percentage of it comes from your part of the country that the coal goes up into that coal-fired plant. But it's got to stop. We got Arizona, the southwest part of this country, for decades under the Republicans, these free market types like Goldwater, that they had for the most powerful setting for the solar power, the sun. And for decades, the Republicans blocked any attempt to begin the use of solar energy. And places like Germany are outclassing us, and Finland up in the far north there near the Arctic are outclassing us in solar energy and wind power. It's disgusting. We're supposed to be the leading nation. We used to lead by example, but it's not the case any longer. It's disgusting. God love those miners, Bob. I'll let you go on, and I didn't mean to take up so much airtime. I'll let you get up.
That's okay, Brian. No sweat. I appreciate your thoughts. I really do, and I appreciate
good night,
your good wishes. Take care.
Bye
now.
Bye-bye.
You know, it reminds me, back in the day, the United States government used to sign treaties with native peoples. And, of course, it all involved none of those treaties were ever entered into in good faith. They were time sucks. They were little documentary time vampires that bought the government time until they needed that land that they had just ceded. But many of those native treaties had lines in them, you know, because they were written in such a way as to never mind. But they had phrases in them like, as long as grass grows, sun shines, and wind blows. Even at a time in this country when the federal government wanted to talk in native terms about things that were eternal, they said, this treaty will last as long as sun shines, grass grows, and wind blows. And the sun does shine, and the wind does blow. And you know what? Shame on you to everybody who's a Democrat who's out there who has ever fallen in line with the right-wing talking point that Jimmy Carter was a bad president. He may go down in history as being one of the most enlightened we ever had. Go back. Treat it as something you need to do for yourself. Go back. Read. Go back and read Jimmy Carter's 1977 energy speech and wonder where we would be 33 years later in 2010 if we'd only paid attention instead of that greasy-headed old freak Ronald Reagan. Yeah, well, it's morning in America, mommy. Imagine where we'd be. The sun shines, and the wind blows, and the United States is doing almost nothing to capitalize on the most available free energy in the world. Why? Well, because, you know, if Americans had free energy to their homes, or at next to no cost, well, that wouldn't be good for the shareholders, now would it? Which leads, of course, inexorably to another query, and that is, who really are we the people? Is it you and I? I don't own a single blessed share of stock. Is it you and I? Or is it we the people who are shareholders, who happen to be citizens of the United States? Who does our government serve? An enlightened government that serves all of its people would actually be paying attention to things like energy. An enlightened government that was paying attention to all of its people wouldn't have somewhere between $60 and $280 billion worth of welfare for coal companies, not coal miners, but for coal companies inside proposed energy legislation in this country. It simply would not happen. Ultimately, that is the question that has to be answered. What do we mean when we say we the people? What do we mean? Tell you what. Let's take a little break. If you're on hold, I implore you to stay that way. And we'll come back after the top of the hour break to your phone calls for the remainder of the program, such as it is. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You are listening. You're listening to the horn.
To die like James A.G. in the back of some taxi on the run. So much time wasted, the feast of life just tasted, then it's gone. But the life that he was living and the gift that he was given were all one. The bad comes with the good, the madness and love, it's all or none. I don't want to end up like Terry Malloy in a cab, carrying on about how it's gone, how it could have been a contender, and people would remember what he'd done. But there's fights that you don't take, and there's nights when you break and you just do what you can do, and answer to who you have to when you're done. But take that ride, 'cause we fly tomorrow to the other side. We make it through tonight. Some rented limousine, drifting through the night, so far from the light that he had seen. But the road that we've been riding looks a lot like lost and lonesome highway, the some still take to find their way home.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Apparently, I'm receiving word from Sue that CNN is devoting significant coverage to this disaster. Speculation, she reports, that either methane or coal dust triggered today's explosion. And in that case, if that does prove to be the case, there's a boatload of meaning in that because, frankly, measures are supposed to be taken to keep dust and methane from doing that. Sometimes I suppose you can't. But you especially can't when you cut corners. You got to remember that Massey has been busted for just such things before, using a ventilation shaft improperly, and air that was supposed to go to miners underground instead being used to haul coal out of the hole. Yeah, that ad that we always run for the Coal River Wind Project. Such freighted words. Safe, good-paying jobs. Safe, good-paying jobs. Massey claims it pays good money. But how good is the money? How good is the money to a widow and to orphans? Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Well, Man, Brian was right on it. I wondered if I could expand a little on where he was going with this, because that's what got me about all this was the part where you said, and my parents, more than anything else, did not want me going down into the coal mines. And I realized that we've lost that. Not only do the numbers show that all the generations, for like at least the last two, aren't better off, and in fact we're slipping from where our parents were. But that expectation is gone. That's not even in the popular lexicon anymore. That's not even something. I mean, that used to be one of these, you know, proud American visions, didn't it?
Yeah.
And now it's like. Now you just hear, and this, I have to be careful here because I feel awful about the dead miners, but I keep seeing the vision of, you know, of these people who look at you with this blank stare going, well, what else can my Billy Ray do except, you know, mine coal? And I'm thinking, just like you are, well, I don't know, it's 2010, you ought to be, thinking about what else you can do. I mean, everybody's a factor in this. Everyone is responsible for what happened today, seems to me.
Well, Reverbo, you are, of course, 100% correct.
I'm 100% here.
But, you know, there's always the question of, you know, where did we get off the track? And well, then again, understand, please, that my father took a job 600 miles from here that was still very much industrial and still very much dangerous. But you know what? He never came home and said, you know, son, if you're lucky, someday you'll get to work on a silicon furnace like me. Never. Not once, Reverbo. Not once. The only from the time that I remember being spoken to by my parents, one thing was preached: college.
Exactly.
Learning, knowledge. And even when I went, they didn't say, "Well, you know, I think you need to go to engineering school." They said, "Go learn something." And I'd come home from breaks, and did you learn stuff? Yeah, I learned stuff. You know, this from two of the most intelligent people I ever knew. What'd you learn? And, you know, suddenly over 2 weeks Christmas break, I'm regurgitating an entire semester of, you know, 18 hours worth of classwork. Okay, sounds like you're learning. Let's get you some brownies made and send you back.
The parents, the schools are letting us down. The parents aren't asking their kids what they're learning. Both parents are working. No one's home, so the kids are smoking pot and drinking beer. It went off the tracks in every goddamn way possible. And now we're paying the price. I don't know. I mean, the undercurrent of a cavalcade of crazy is the end of days.
Yeah, it is. It is. What maybe I'm failing to get across, and I'm not taking what you're saying as any indication that I am. I'm just, you know, constantly engaged in my own little level of navel gazing. For people who have never seen Southern West Virginia, I try so hard because, you know, radio's in my soul, and you know the greatest radio broadcasters of all time are the guys who do baseball and can keep you engaged during a rain delay. In many ways, my career for the last 5 years has been one long rain delay. And I've tried really hard to make West Virginia and Appalachia real. And it is as beautiful a place as exists on earth until you get to where the coal industry has been. And then it is dirty and forlorn and hopeless. And even the very homes themselves exude a desperate attempt at normalcy that they know they will never achieve. The very stones cry out, Reverbo. And the fact of the matter is, this happened on April the 5th, 2010, because there has been a collective decision made by people outside Appalachia that Appalachian people do not deserve a real economy, a real shot. You know, you don't... who wrote it? Darn it. I don't have it to hand. But whoever wrote, you'll never leave Harlan alive... That wasn't just some idle something. Oh, I think I need to write a song about Harlan County, Kentucky. This is going to be real grim. This will be big on the minor chord circuit. That's real.
Well, yeah, and they want to share. They want to make sure that I share in that pain too, and all the rest of the middle class. They want to expand Appalachia out to all of us.
Yeah, because.
That's what I mean. They I don't, you know, there's people in the world right now, and again, Brian stole some of my thunder. I was thinking, yeah, there's countries right now that are contemplating things like, I don't know, a 30-hour work week, retiring when you're 50 so that you can make room, open up jobs for people who are 20, expanding the safety net to cover people, you know, for the younger retirement age, putting solar panels up on everybody's roof. And here in America, let's see what they're contemplating. I bet they're dreaming once again of the 60-hour work week, everybody working for $3 an hour, and privatizing Social Security. What the hell is wrong with this picture? I'm just stunned. I'm tired of saying that too. And we keep, and it's just, and I'm tired of being unable to have any sort of constructive conversation about it without people calling you Nazis or communists or capitalists or socialists. Because one thing is very clear to me: none of this works unless everybody's in it. You can't have Medicare for all unless everybody participates. I'm sorry, rich people, you have to too, or it doesn't work. We can't have a clean and safe energy system in our country unless everybody's in it.
I mean,
So whatever, call it whatever you want. Call it socialism. I don't care what you call it. But either everybody's in, or there's no point to even try.
Yeah. I mean, what are the industrial accidents and diseases associated with the erection of solar panels?
Let's see. The occasional falling off a ladder and possibly some bad sunburns.
Hey, we've got sunscreen for that.
Yeah, we do.
And we've got lanyards that hook to ladders.
We could mark those up pretty high, too. We could probably make some money off that.
Will your ability to breathe air be compromised for the rest of your life by helping build windmills? I mean, are windmills known for sucking the air right out of your lungs? Because I haven't read anything about that.
Windmills are tricky. They suck air, they blow air, and I don't know. You know, I'm not an authority on windmills, but I can tell you.
I mean, they do result in some bat ceviche from time to time, I'm told. But, you know, I think we can engineer around that. If you screw up the windmill, does a massive wall of water drown 20, 30 people? Or if you screw up the windmill, does something explode that traps 20 or 30 human beings alive?
I like when people who haven't even set foot in the National Gallery of Art suddenly decide to expound on the how windmills are going to destroy our natural vistas. I mean, these people. But I remember we had this conversation last week. What is it that these people want? How do they want it to look around here? Do they want, like, domes literally over their mansions, and outside the dome is all just black soot?
Have you ever seen, and it was, you know, just a terribly, terribly cheesy backdrop, but have you ever seen the external view of the world that Logan lived in Logan's Run?
Not for a long time.
It's a big biodome. And outside, you know, nature has apparently come back, but outside, you know, it's unlivable. And the only place you could live was inside your dome.
Does that sound good, as long as
they're the ones that get the domes. I mean, as long as lobster can be delivered daily to the dome, as long as we can fit the New York Stock Exchange inside the dome.
Well, now you're talking about a dome gap. Sorry.
We cannot allow ourselves to have a dome gap.
Not now, not ever. But you use the word collective. I guess an oligarchy or a plutocracy can actually collectively get together and decide how they're going to just totally screw us over. Well,
animals can be bred and slaughtered?
Yes, lots of. Well, you know, the ratio, I believe it was 20 women to each man. That sounded good to Dr. Buck Durdson of article.
Really, doctor? Yes.
Yeah. Well, and of course you would pick them, you know, at their
mother. They have to be chosen for their appeal.
Sure.
They would have to be attractive.
Be able to breed prodigiously.
Of course, the other side of it is you know, if we start putting up all those windmills, they're going to, you know, we have to understand that everything has a downside, Ruvervo, because, you know, the well-heeled money people like to move places where they think they're living in nature, and those windmills mess up their viewscape.
That's what I mean. It's I don't think
the people who moved. I mean, the people who moved from God knows where, you know, maybe Connecticut down to Greenbrier County, West Virginia. You know what? They might suffer terrible, terrible, debilitating view pollution. Their view might be polluted.
Yeah, well, what will we call it? We call it Vista.
Yeah.
We have to think of a name for that. Is that happening a lot? A lot of those people from New England heading down to West Virginia, Bob?
We are trying to build an economy on it. For instance, here where I live, there's a coal company that was engaged in blowing up the mountain over here that a few miles as the crow flies from that same mountain bought up a bunch of land next to the national park here, and they've put in a subdivision, and they've hung all kinds of no trespassing signs. And it drives me crazy because you know how it is with these McMansion developments. They all come with, you know, lame deer trail. You know, they come with these cute little names. Bold Bear Estates, right?
Woodchuck Drive.
Right. Well, the one we've got here is Wild Rock.
That's a new one.
Yeah, Wild Rock Estates. And I was telling somebody about it the other day. Maybe it was David in Tennessee. Every time I drive by it, and I see that, because they took a lot of sandstone, native sandstone, and piled it up into a sort of a, you know, rampart or something, and they've gotten some metal letters that they've driven into the rock, and it says Wild Rock. And every time I drive by it, just because, you know, I'm obsessive compulsive about the English language, and.
As you should be.
And every time I drive by Wild Rock, I scream out the window, how the fuck can you tell? You know, a Wild Rock? How can you tell a Wild Rock from a tame one? You know, it's English that English that has no meaning. It's empty calories, so to speak. Wild Rock? And their first road is Peregrine Trail.
Well, you can just see them just lining up by the thousands from New Jersey and Connecticut. They don't have any Wild Rocks up there.
Yep, right.
Well, they bought those. They bought off of an L.L. Bean catalog. You can buy rocks, but they're all the edges are rounded off, and you can keep them in your house.
Why not call it Pet Rock?
Well, yeah, why not? You mentioned calories. You mentioned food. Well, I can, you know, earlier in the program, you weren't on the fence about this, as I recall. You were telling people in no uncertain terms to, you want to hit that light switch on the way out of that room. But think about this. The same people involved in the coal, in the mine disaster today, if you just take this a little further, yeah, don't forget to turn off your oven after you cook that pizza. Except, what is in our food? The ingredients of mass-produced food are, I can reduce those down to three. I think it's diesel oil, chemical and biological additives, hormones and like growth chemicals, and if you're lucky, a teeny tiny bit of real food. So, we're getting it from every damn way you can get it. We're getting work.
Sure we are. And again, as I noted, you know, it's very important that no one consider this stuff. You know, I read an article, some little brief interview with Moby. You know who Moby is?
He's a musician?
Yeah. He's like the great-great-grandnephew of Herman Melville. That's why he calls himself Moby.
I never knew that.
This interview, you know, he went vegan. And, you know, I just don't have it in me. I really don't. I'm a carnivore. I'm a meat eater. Can't help it. Always will be. Until the meat's gone. But, you know, I've said before, they really are working on doing everything they can to make me one. You know, not the vegans, not PETA. Those people annoy the daylights out of me. God knows the Humane Society of the U.S. has ads running now with a celebrity voiceover saying, just $25 a month to the Humane Society of the U.S. and you can save a puppy. And I'm thinking, yeah, you'll get that $25 as soon as you call back that award you gave to my congressman for being an environmental steward and a friend of animals.
Mm-hmm.
But those aren't the guys that are making me pushing me toward vegetarianism. It's the meat industry itself.
And what
Moby said in this interview, they said, you know, well, do you, and, you know, all these people that do these interviews, sometimes I just want to find them and slap them. Well, do you consider being vegan morally better than being a meat eater?
Oh, brother.
And bless his heart, Moby's answer was, well, you know, I'm thinking a moral meat eater is probably a better person than a vegan sociopath.
he could have just answered yes.
So, you know, hooray.
Well, but this is the, yeah, that's why I'm saying this is such a tricky thing, because everybody is responsible for what happened today. And there's not a single level of this that doesn't.
And just to be clear, the for all I know, they're not digging, you know, at this particular non-union the death trap. They're not. They may not be digging electricity coal. This may literally be part of those metallurgical reserves that go in large part to China. And that creates a level of national responsibility that's actually broader than if it was done for electricity generation. Because you know what? Somebody in Nevada is not burning Appalachian coal for the most part. Although probably there's a little bit of mountaintop removal coal that gets out there. But the fact of the matter is, if that is like that, if it's off to China, and it's coming back to you as pick something, anything made of steel,
lawnmowers.
Yeah, if it's coming back to you as a lawnmower, you're in this.
Yeah, that's what. But there's nothing. There's no way out of it except through the mechanism that they have designed, which is. The only way out is to buy your way out. And they won't let you buy your way out.
And, you know, there are people.
I don't see how you can do it. We can consume anything. Well, of course, that's the whole. It's our whole consumer.
That's the nature of the Dodge.
You can't. You either directly or indirectly support the worst kind of stuff. I don't see how it. Yeah. You want to eat well, it's going to cost you more money. You want to live better, it's going to cost you more money.
And it doesn't matter if you live on Mulberry Street or in Poisoned Fawn Commons. It's coming to you because, like you know, there ain't no dome.
Is there really a subdivision called Poisoned Fawn Commons? Because I want to see a picture of it.
Not that you want to live there or nothing.
Squash Turtle Trail. I can't wait to. You could probably get a good deal on a loan at a house over there, man. You remember the movie?
And it's probably, you know, the wallboard in it's probably all made out of, come on, help work with me here, coal fly ash, which means that it'll poison you within 3 years of moving in.
I don't see any reason to get out of bed anymore.
Well,
never mind. I'm not ready for that yet, but I'm working.
I mean, you do have to go to your possum shrine, and you know, unless you've got one built in the bedroom.
I'll have to work on that too. Do you remember that movie? I think as a kid, I did sort of like this. The Rod Taylor was in it, and that luscious Yvette Minnieu was in it. It was called The Time Machine, and it was the same imagery. Everybody always has the same imagery. One of your callers tonight was talking about Margaret Bourke White and those depression faces. And, yeah, the haircuts are different today and the clothes are different. But those faces, I guarantee you, are the same in your state today. And I remember that movie, they had that machinery. They had that dark, dirty rumbling. It was all underground. And the creatures all had sort of mutated into this
they were all ugly and squat, grunted a lot and stuff. Remember that? And on top of the surface was this sort of pseudo happy land with the sun shining all the time.
Right.
And all these and Yvette Mimieux prancing around. And in fact, those people were all slaves of the underground machines, remember?
Yeah, proles.
Yeah, and there was some sort of a suggestion, I believe, that they also ate them.
Yeah, and by the way, if there is a poison to Vaughn Commons, it's in Tennessee, because that was David's. And you know, he knows this stuff because he has watched beautiful parcel after beautiful parcel of rolling Tennessee farmland turned into McMansions for people like, you know, gated communities where people like Southern Baptist President Dickland can go and live.
I guess there's enough of them that still have that kind of money to throw around. But yeah, they're called the Morlocks. Now I remember that.
Morlocks, yeah.
The Morlocks. And, yeah, you keep saying, Jesus God, it's 2010, it's 2010. Well, H.G. Wells was talking about it was 5010, and we still had.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, I should probably be taken out and smacked a little bit for my 2010 rant, because you know what? It is 2010, Reverbo, and I'm acting, and I'm bemoaning something happening in the United States that happens to people all over the world every damn day to one degree or another, who live in much more dire circumstances. You know, I have just put on display for the world to hear my own damnable sense of North American privilege. But at least I have the guts to confront it in my own self when I catch myself.
You do, and you say no more. It's like that can get old. I think people understand that you have the sensibilities to and the perception for things like that. I mean, after all, you did have something happen rather close to home that brought all this. Brought us down again. But the whole thing is, you know, that's why this whole thing of people in this, you're either in it or it doesn't work. Yeah, we can all wait for, like, one magician to roll out of the sky, one trillionaire to fix everything. Or
But one trillionaire can't even do that.
Well, I mean,
I think, in a way, and now this, you're going to have to work with me here for a second, Reverbo. But I think in a way that we may be getting to the sort of psychological roots of fundamentalist millennialism. How's that for a mouthful?
I like it.
You know, fundamentalism is deep around here. Now, granted, it has been co-opted by the right wing, but it has not always been that way. Okay? Fundamentalism, you know, it. How can I put this? It's a beautiful thing to behold. It was before the right wing completely co-opted it and strangled it and poisoned it and made it something tawdry and filthy.
So they're good at that.
But to have seen the faith of people in mountain communities, the faith of my grandmother, the faith of my grandfathers, the faith of people in this community. And, you know, they all had a hope in the hereafter. And they all had a hope. Every generation, honest to goodness, every generation believed that theirs was the generation that would see Christ return. Now, we all know that the people who put together the very root of the filthiness of millennialism have at their root think nasty crap like anti-Semitism and getting to put Jews to the sword because they won't bow their knee. We know that. But I'm talking about out on the front lines. I'm talking about the privates, the people who sit in the pews on Sunday. They believed that they were going to be the generation that saw Christ return. And you know what they knew they were going to see when they saw Christ return? Reverbo, you know what they did? They were going to see a world made utterly and completely, totally, harmoniously just.
Yes. They had it right.
That was going to be the trillionaire who came back and fixed things, and there wouldn't be people starving on more than half of the planet.
And their loved ones wouldn't sit in a rocking chair on the porch at 50 years old, coughing their bloody lungs into a white hanky. Because all would be made right.
But if you're going to have a fantastic dream, why not have the dream where everything's made peaceful and right? I think that was the idea. Well, good luck with that. Yeah, the wizard trillionaires is Jesus H. Christ. I'm not sure what that H is for. But that doesn't work. Imagine if Jesus Christ actually did return. I mean, you know, it would, there'd be...
Well, first of all, Sean Hannity would call for him to be killed.
Well, good grief. He'd run into the dysfunctional United States Senate. He'd get nothing done. I mean, he'd be...
No, but see, I think that's what people in their simple faith, and you know, my grandmother was no dummy. She was fairly well educated for her era. And the thing that was going to happen when Jesus came back is, no, there wouldn't be any gridlock. And if Sean Hannity called for his head, Jesus would just look at him and point at him and say, "You, to the lake of eternal fire reserved for the devil and his angels for all eternity, goodbye." And it would be done. Senator Coburn gets in your way. You, Senator Coburn, lake of fire, table for one.
Well, yeah, the world where when people fall down, your neighbors pick you up.
And the funny thing out of all of that is that for a people who pride themselves on their patriotism, it is also a yearning for an autocracy. Because it's an inherent understanding that the form of government that we have in this country, for good or ill, some of each, is fundamentally unable to deal with the real needs of the people who live here.
You just touched on another tremendously basic thing, and I guess you got to try to get another call in. The interesting thing is that I think human beings... The nature of humanity is to be communal and to be helpful and to be to lend a helping hand and to watch each other's back and to it's not to be competitive at first. I think we're born with this a pretty darn nice set of values inside, and this whole notion that socialism is this artificial constraint. That the political systems you want to force on us, because we're not really like that. We're really just a bunch of competitive, you know, animals that want to stab you in the neck whenever we can.
Yeah, the apes with the bones and the monolith and the Wagner and their Strauss.
I think we come out pretty much, you know, at least before the men got a hold of things 10,000 years ago. I think people were probably pretty nice to each other.
Well, I remember how much fun, great sport the right wing made of Hillary Clinton when she dared to write that book. Look at that woman writing a book. How about that? The one that was called It Takes a Village.
Right. Well, she's right.
Well, it does. If you are going to succeed as a species, it does take the cooperation of everyone. It really, really does. Now, that's not to say what the structure has to be or the process or anything, but what you said, Reverbo, is so damn true. Everybody's got to be in it. Everybody's got to be part of it. You know, I'll close with this. God, I sound like a preacher, but there's an old joke. A socialist, a Democrat, and a Republican are captured on a trip into the darkest jungle. And the chief of the tribe comes up to them. They're staked out in the center of the village complex. And he says, "Look, we're going to use your flesh for our meat, your bones for our tools, and your skins for our canoes. Do you have any last words?" And the socialist says, "I only regret that you can't understand that we could all make this so much better by working together for each other."
Okay.
And the chief hands him a knife, and he cuts his own throat and dies.
And he goes to the Democrat, and he says, we're going to use your flesh for our meat, your bones for our tools, and your skins for our canoes. And he lands request, and the Democrat, too, says, may I have a knife? And the chief hands him the knife, and he says, you know, if only we worked for the common good, this wouldn't be necessary. And he cuts his own throat, and he dies. And the chief comes to the Republican and says, we're going to use your flesh for our meat, your bones for our tools, and your skins for our canoes. And he last requests, and the Republican says, yeah, I want a fork. And the chief cuts him loose and hands him the fork, and the Republican starts stabbing himself with the fork all over him. Fuck your canoes!
Well, I'm going to take something. I'm going to take that back. Not everybody is born with this intrinsic quality of goodness.
My point entirely.
Yeah, there are a few that we'll have to drag kicking and screaming. No, we won't. They don't get a ticket. We leave them behind. I've been through this already. Yeah. Just any way you can make it not work. Those are our boys. So I'm sorry about today. And I'm.
By the way, the death toll's up to 7, and the missing have been walked back to 19.
Oh, God. Well, I'll tell you one thing, though. It's going to happen again.
And again, and again, and again. This particular mine has a safety record exponentially worse than the national average. It has that safety record, Reverbo, because Massey Energy has a corporate culture that says you can raise profits by cutting safety. I think that's lunacy. But
of course it's lunacy. Well, my sympathies to the survivors and their families and the families of the... My sympathies to all involved.
Thank you, Reverbo. Thank you very much. Right. And you know what? It's personal.
Yeah, doesn't get much more. All right, my friend. I'll talk to you later.
Bye now. That's our critic at large. That's Reverbo. And we move along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, is that Bob?
This is Bob.
Bob, how are you? I'm tuning in a little bit late here, hearing about this tragedy and everything. Is this your backyard, practically?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry to hear that.
As you drive, it's about an hour from here. It's probably, as the crow flies, 40 miles, 50.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. And I remember this in I was saying in the chat room, I think, when I got on a little late. Didn't this happen 2006?
Late 2005, Sago.
Was that Massey also?
No, that was International Coal Group. But shortly thereafter, there was another tragedy at a mine called Aracoma that was Massey.
That's right. I mean, I'm just curious. I mean, you've been following this so much more closely than I have. This is Gareth, by the way, out in Bucks County. How you doing?
Doing well.
Yeah, I guess the question was, did they do anything after the last tragedies?
They did a lot of posturing and shut mine. You know, the governor came out and shut down every mine in the state for a day so that they could figure out what was going on. And then hearings were held in Washington about rescue rooms and breathing systems. And mandates were put in places that Massey, of course, stuck its thumb on at the end of its finger with its four fingers in the air, waving them, going, that would cost us more money.
Oh, that simple. Wow. That was the end of that then. I'm sorry to hear that. So here we are a few years later, and the tragedy strikes again. This is a horrible, I mean, this sounds terrible. I mean, I can imagine, I have a hard time imagining worse ways to die.
And Garrett, what I said at the beginning of the program was not hyperbole. Even as we speak right now, with the horror not entirely folded out,
right?
Somewhere in one of the towers in Charleston, or perhaps Richmond, a team of lawyers has already assembled.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out how to protect corporate profits at the expense of corporate victims. Now, I'm not speculating. I am telling you, as God is my witness, that is happening right now.
They move fast. I'm surprised we haven't heard from the PR Massey people yet.
Well, you know, Don Blankenswine has put out a press release in which he said, we're uncertain as to what happened, but we are working diligently on rescue efforts, and we are in contact with all of the appropriate agencies. Never mind the fact that it took them 30 minutes to notify the Mine Safety and Health Administration after the explosion took place.
There's one thing I was trying to make straight, you know, to my friend here. He was concerned that when you heard about this, he was confused by your reaction, but I told him that you look at these guys. I mean, I know you're against this type of mining, you know, in general, but you don't look at these guys who work there as anything more than just like Iraqi soldiers. You wish they were back. You have nothing against them personally.
They're victims.
Right, right.
They are victims. They are victims of a 150-year-long war on human beings in Appalachia, Garrett. That have been waged by coal interests from in and mostly out of state and in many instances outside the territorial boundaries of the United States.
Right. So you bet you have nothing but sadness for their families, like that, I guess.
This is agony. This is agony. And what I tried to explain earlier, that there's hardly anybody in this state who does not have some connection to the mining industry, who does not have some family, some grandfather, father, brother, who has been tied to this. I have an uncle whose arm is attached to his body, but ain't much of an arm because it was chewed off by a continuous miner, okay?
Oh, okay.
My father was involved in rock falls in the mine. My grandfather was killed by coal mining. My great-grandfather was involved in the effort to bring the Union. Okay, and that's not just Bob. That's everybody in this state.
Right, right.
And I, for one, my heart aches for these people because, you know, on 17 different levels, Garrett, my heart aches. Because among other things, for instance, if somebody went to them and said, you know, we'd like for you to be a member of the United Mine Workers, we don't need no union no more. It's safe. And they're paying us, Massey's paying us more than your union job pays you. Why'd I need a union?
Yeah.
And I haven't seen an update yet. The United Mine Workers, with the single best mine rescue teams on earth, are standing ready to go and render aid. And Massey will not call them in.
We're back to this union thing again. Okay. Well, how did China handle their rescue today? I can't figure that one out. I mean, what is their setup compared to us?
They lose 10,000 miners a year, where we lose 50.
Oh, okay. So you think is it hushed up? Is it because they said they had the most remarkable rescue ever today?
Well, it was a remarkable rescue.
Right.
They're trying to, you know, they're trying to modernize and everything, but they are with their coal industry roughly where the United States was with its coal industry 100 years ago.
Right. They're burning those little sticks for heat in their house, aren't they? Basically. My dad told me.
Yeah. I mean, you can see photographs of China in the coal regions. At high noon, it looks like foggy London town of 1858.
Yeah, I know, back when people were barely breathing. It's hard to, There's such a dark side to the so-called Chinese miracle, isn't there? The way I look at it.
Yeah, it's no miracle. It's a horror.
Yeah, it is a horror. But I also want to put my condolences out to these families, too. It's something nightmarish about that way of dying. I don't know what it is. It seems like it's like dying like a rat, you know, in a hole. It just seems, especially when you think that it's...
And that's because companies like Massey treat their people no better than rats in a hole.
I don't know the entire history of Massey. I've been getting educated only the last week, but it just gets worse the more I learn, you know, and I can't imagine what you know about them.
First of all, Massey is founded on the principle that all unions everywhere must eventually be completely destroyed. I'm not kidding.
Okay,
And that is because if you have a union, you have people who are looking over management's shoulder, or that's how Massey feels about it, and making them less profitable. And the reason, and Massey's not even profitable, okay? I doubt if there's been 6 quarters out of the last 40 where Massey declared a dividend.
The only time I saw Massey, I saw a Massey guy on CNN months ago on a panel arguing unions. And you're right, he had a litany of reasons why unions are destroying, you know, the airline industry, this industry, that thing. And without ever addressing the corruption going on the higher level, you know.
Exactly.
All he had was a litany of unions destroyed this, unions destroyed that. He just went on and on and on. I mean, I think they are determined to wipe out the whole concept, which would be bizarre.
It wouldn't be bizarre. It would be their dream come true. Because what they want, and this is not hyperbole, Garrett. What they want is the America of 1885 and 1895.
Who just said that brilliant quote I heard about, God, less than an hour ago? Someone said, I can use one half of the working class to wipe out the other half? Who said that?
I don't know who said it, but Clayton sent that along, and I've heard that before. I'm not sure who's responsible for it, but it's very true.
It is very true, but I don't know. See, the thing is, Pennsylvania is the king, one of the kings of coal. Nothing's going to change that. I can't see anything changing for a while, you know, because do you see anything in the state legislation at all going on to address this on a...
No, because we are doing all in our power to keep from looking at it. You know, coal in America is like having a syphilitic, a level 3 syphilitic in your living room. And nobody wants to talk about how sick he is.
Right.
That's coal in America.
Right. And
there is no good to be... I acknowledge the need for coal for metallurgical purposes.
Right, right, right.
But using coal to create electricity in 2010, when we've got unlimited power from the sun and the wind, is nothing short of benighted, nothing short of stupid, nothing short of mean-spirited and hateful.
Yeah, and we were just talking about that on the chat room, and I was just saying that the Midwest has the potential to be the Saudi Arabia of wind, but it hasn't really it's happening slowly instead of quickly.
There is an area of North Dakota that doesn't even comprise most of North Dakota, through which enough wind blows that we could power the entire United States. There's another similarly small area in Arizona in which the sunlight alone is enough to power the entirety of the United States. Now, can that happen tomorrow? No, it cannot. But it cannot happen tomorrow because we have not had the national will to build a power grid that will let that happen.
You know, but the thing is, this clean coal soundbite, I go to dinner conversations, family Easter conversations, I'm still hearing that out there. Clean coal, clean coal.
And all you can do is say clean coal is a dirty lie and have the facts with you to back it up. Gareth, I do have to run along. We're at the top of the hour, but I appreciate your call. I really do.
I just want to make one more point about the sound bites. The sound bite thing is really, I think, I blame for all this idiocy because, you know what George Carlin said before he died? He said, if Abraham Lincoln was alive today, he'd have to reduce his campaign to, read my lips, no more slavery. So keep that in mind.
Very true. Take care. We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Okay. And you're not? All right, because I hate to leave lights blinking. That's the program. Maybe we'll do more and Monday tomorrow, because I had some real fun lined up.